Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now covering Numbers chapter 4, the entire chapter, verses 1 through 49. We're going to look at the duties of the three clans of the tribe of Levi, the Kohathites, the Gershonites, and the Merarites. Our context is this. In our last chapter, Numbers 3, the last 11 verses of that chapter, we talked about the redemption of the firstborn, which was done by the Levites, one Levite for every firstborn of the sons of Israel, and then the Israelites did not have to pay that 5-shekel head tax. So now we start with Numbers 4, verses 1 through 3. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, take a census of the descendants of Kohath from among the sons of Levi, by their families, by their fathers' households, from 30 years and upward, even to 50 years old, all who enter the service to do the work in the tent of meeting. Now, your first question might be, what's the point of taking the census of the descendants of Kohath? Haven't the sons of Levi already been numbered in the previous chapter? Well, that's true, but this is a census only of those from 30 years old and upward. Well, 30 years old to 50 years old. The previous census in chapter 3 of the Levites was for every Levite from 1 month old upward, and the point of that was so that they would be enough Levites to redeem the firstborn of the tribes of Israel, and the numbers roughly matched. But this is for a different purpose. This census is so that we'll know which Levites are able to do work in moving the tabernacle from place to place in the desert. Now, Kohath is mentioned first. He's actually not the eldest son of the tribe of Levi. He's not the eldest clan leader. Gershon was. So why did the census begin with Kohath instead of Gershon? Well, Gill suggests that perhaps it's because Moses and Aaron sprang from the tribe of Kohath, and so therefore, since they're honorable, Kohath goes first. But the problem with that is that in chapter 3, the previous census of the Levites, which I just mentioned, the Levites from a month old, Gershon is listed first, not Kohath. So why would not Kohath be mentioned in the last chapter if the purpose of Moses is to give Moses and Aaron's clan preeminence? I don't think that's right. The answer, I think, is according to John Gill, the Kohathites carried the ark and the other holy things, and since the Kohathites carried the ark, those things had to be gotten out of the tabernacle first and prepared for travel, and so that's the first thing that had to be done. There was a certain order of breakdown of the temple. The furniture had to be gotten out, and then the tabernacle was broken down next. First thing to be broken down would be the tabernacle. The next thing to take down would be the tabernacle coverings, because they're on top of the tabernacle, those four coverings. Linen, ram skin, some kind of leather that was dyed red, probably cow leather, I think, if I remember correctly. And then the last covering was some kind of sea animal, translated porpoises in some translation. Some sea animal skin was on the very top. So that's a lot of coverings that had to be taken. That would be next, that would go after the furniture. And then the last thing would be the tabernacle itself. The boards and the bars have to be broken down. And that's the order in which the tribes are given. Now, there's an issue here in verse 3. The Kohathites, as well as the other tribes, the Gershonites, the other clans, I'm sorry, the Gershonites and the Merariites, they were all numbered from 30 years old and upward. Why not 25? Numbers 8:24 says this. This is what applies to the Levites. From 25 years old and upward, they shall enter to perform service in the work of the tent of meeting. All right, well, there's a difference there. Numbers 8:24 is service in the tent of meeting. This 30 to 50 years old is for carrying the tabernacle and its assorted furnishings. The NIV Study Bible and Adam Clark and a lot of rabbis say that the first 5 years from 25 to 30 was an apprenticeship to get the Levites used to working in the tabernacle so they would know what they were doing, and then they would be ready to do the heavy lifting of moving the tabernacle through the desert. As Adam Clark said, the service was exceedingly severe and hard physically to do that. We'll take a look at how hard it was to move that tabernacle through the desert in just a minute. Now, there might be an objection to this idea that the 5 years was needed as an apprenticeship between age 25 and 30 because 25 years old are just as strong as 30 years old. They're just as strong, but they're not as experienced. After all, it might not be hard to move the tabernacle furniture physically at the age of 25. You could do that just as well as if you were 30. But if you make a mistake and gaze upon, for example, the Ark of the Covenant before it was wrapped up by the priest, you would be a dead Levite. So they needed 5 years of getting ready for their service in moving the tabernacle. I think that makes good sense. There's another reason, perhaps, why the census was only between age 30 and 50. It could be because they had plenty of people from 30 to 50, and from 25 to 50 might be too many Levites to deal with. That's just my idea. I didn't read that in a commentary. But I really think the reason is because they needed a little time of probation, a time of apprenticeship to learn about the tabernacle. Now, why does the census cut off at the age of 50? Well, you get over 50, it might be hard to do the heavy work of lifting and carrying the tabernacle and its accoutrements. People's backs might be hurting. But even after 50, the Levites could still do light work in the tabernacle. In fact, it says so in Numbers 8:26. They, referring to Levites over 50, they may, however, assist their brothers in the tent of meeting to keep an obligation, but they themselves shall do no work. That means the heavy work. Thus you shall deal with the Levites. Okay, so 30 to 50. Now, in verse 3, it says that these Kohathites from 30 to 50 enter the service to do the work in the tent of meeting. Now, that doesn't literally mean in the tent of meeting, because they couldn't go into the holy place or the holy of holies. Levites were not allowed to go in there. John Gill says this. He says it refers to the courtyard of the temple, where they assisted in preparing sacrifices and so forth by killing the animals, putting them on tables, latching them down with meat hooks and all that kind of thing. However, I must say that even though generally Levites are not allowed to go in the Holy of Holies, they had to go in there to carry the ark out. It was covered first, as we'll see later, by the priest, but they did have to go in there. So I don't know why John Gill has to make the point of that and saying that the work was not in the tent of meeting. Yes, they had to go into the tent of meeting to get the furniture out. We go now to Numbers chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. This is the work of the descendants of Kohath in the tent of meeting concerning the most holy things. When the camp sets out, Aaron and his sons shall go in, and they shall take down the veil of the screen and cover the ark of the testimony with it. And they shall lay a covering of porpoise skin on it, and they shall spread over it a cloth of pure blue, and shall insert its poles. Now, the work that the Kohathites did was said to be concerning the most holy things. Well, the Kohathites were responsible for those most holy things, but they couldn't touch them, or they couldn't even look at them, as we'll see in verses 15 and 20. Couldn't do that while those most holy things were unveiled. Once they were veiled, of course, they could touch them. They had to touch them to get them out of there. What was the penalty for touching or seeing these things? Death. Therefore, the work of the Kohathites was supervised carefully by Aaron and his sons, in other words, the priest. In verse 5, it says, Aaron and his sons, the priest, shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the ark of the testimony with it. So they did that work. And, of course, the priests were allowed in the, well, they were always allowed in the holy place. They usually weren't allowed in the Holy of Holies, but in this case, when it got time to move, they were allowed to go in there. Now, what were the most holy things that were packed up? The showbread table, the table of the bread of the presence, the seven-branch candlestick, the golden altar of burnt offering, the golden altar of incense, the veil between the holy place and the holy of holies, the inner veil, the second veil, so-called, the vessels that would carry water for sprinkling and blood for sprinkling, all those things had to be packed up. Now, there's one piece of furniture that the Kohathites did not carry. That was the altar of burnt offering, which was outside the tent of meeting, the tabernacle. The Gershonites carried that, not the Kohathites, as we'll see. But all the stuff on the inside was the responsibility of the Kohathites. Now we need to make a distinction, too, about who carried what veil. The inner veil the Kohathites carried, because that was sort of sacred, kind of close to the Ark of the Covenant. The Kohathites, the family of Aaron and Moses, they carried the inner veil, the outer veil, the veil, the curtain, the veil that separated the holy place from the courtyard, the doorway to the tabernacle. That was carried by the Gershonites, as well as the screen, the veil, the curtain at the doorway of the outer court surroundings, the veil that went around the whole outer court that separated the courtyard from the camp of Israel. That was also carried by the Gershonites, not the Kohathites. But other than that, it's easy to make a general rule. Inside of the tabernacle, the furnishings was carried by the Kohathites. Now, as I said earlier, Aaron and his sons were allowed to go in there. This was an exception to the rule that priests only were allowed into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. John Gill says that what happened was the Shekinah glory left the Holy of Holies and went and became the pillar of cloud which led the Israelites on the march. So it was outside the sanctuary at the time the priests went in there. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown agrees with that and said, quote, "But when the cloud removed from the tabernacle, the sanctuary might be entered by the common priest. As to them was reserved the exclusive privilege of packing the sacred utensils. And it was not till the holy things were thus ready for carriage that the Kohathites were allowed to approach." Now, the coverings that were put on the Ark of the Covenant and the other pieces of furniture were put there so that those pieces of sacred furniture, might not be seen or touched by the Levites when carrying them. Again, the idea of holiness. Only people close to God, the priests, could touch these things that were representing God. Now, there was a skin put on the sacred furnishings, a covering of porpoise skin, as the NASB puts it. Again, that porpoise is a translation that nobody's really sure of. It sounds like the porpoise skin is put on first because it's mentioned first in verse 6, but most probably the cloth of pure blue was put over the Ark of the Testimony first and then the porpoise skin after that, because porpoise skins, sea animal skins, keep off water, so that would protect the Ark. And then the sons of Aaron, the priests, would insert the poles in the side of the Ark, and it says, okay, and then they would say, okay, Ark's ready to go, and then the Kohathites would come in, pick up the poles, and carry the Ark away. Now, this porpoise skin that's over the Ark of the Covenant is not the same porpoise skin that was over the whole tabernacle, over the whole wooden frame of the building. The Gershonites carried that. We turn now to Numbers chapter 4, verses 7 through 10. "Over the table of the bread of the presence they shall also spread a cloth of blue and put on it the dishes and the pans and the sacrificial bowls and the jars for the drink offering, and the continual bread shall be on it. They shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet material and cover the same with a covering of porpoise skin, and they shall insert its poles." That, let's stop right there, verse 8, that is the instructions, those are the instructions for how to get the table of the bread of the presence out. First of all, the dishes and the pans and the bowls and the jars are all put on it. Now, what would that be? The dishes, those were the dishes that would hold the 12 loaves of the bread of the presence. And then the pans, that would probably be the pans that held the incense, not for the table, but for the golden altar, according to John Gill. And then you got sacrificial bowls. Those would be bowls that would hold the blood for the sprinkling of blood and the various rituals that required that. Jars for the drink offering. Those are probably bowls also held for the wine of the drink offerings when the drink offering is poured out before the bronze altar. The continual bread, that would be the bread that is the bread of the presence. Here's a quote from John Gill about the continual bread, the bread that is continually there, as the NIV has it. Quote, "The showbread is called continual because it was always on the table. For while the one was removing by a set of priests, which had stood a week, new loaves were placed by another set of priests." Well, the latest version of that continual bread was wrapped up with these cloths, blue and scarlet. Verse 8, "They shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet material and cover the same with a covering of porpoise skin." Again, that's to keep the rain off. "And they shall insert its poles." If you recall from the description of the table of the bread of the presence, they were at the four corners. They were the rings that the poles were stuck through. Two rings on one side and two rings on the other side, and one long side and on the other long side. All right, so that takes care of the table. Verse 9, "Then they shall take a blue cloth and cover the lampstand for the light." That's the seven-branch candlestick, along with its lamps and its snuffers and its trays and all its oil vessels by which they serve it. All right, well, let's see what that is. The lamps are the seven lamps at the top, which are basically little clay bowls with a pinched edge of the pinched rim and a wick laid in that pinched rim. And the wick, the rear end of the wick, is in the middle of the bowl where the oil is poured. So that would be the lamp. They would be detached from the branches of the candlestick, and so they needed to be taken care of. Its snuffers, that's either something that actually snuffs the light, or it could actually be a trimmer, hard to translate the Greek word. The NIV has wick trimmers, because that had to be done. The wicks had to be trimmed periodically, and its trays. Now, what are the trays used for? The King James has snuff dishes. I'm not sure what snuff dishes is. It sounds awful like a spittoon, but I'm sure that's not what it is. Perhaps it's a tray that in which the wick trimmings were placed when they were cut off the wicks of the candlestick. And, of course, the oil vessels, the jars or the whatever they kept the oil in, that the oil of which had to be poured into the lampstand to keep it burning all the time. All right, so those are all the utensils of the lampstand. They are wrapped up in a blue cloth. I don't know why it doesn't have a red cloth like the table does, but it doesn't. Verse 10, and they shall put it, the seven-branch candlestick, and all its utensils in a covering of porpoise skin, and shall put it on the carrying bars. Once again, it's covered with porpoise skin to keep the rain off, and all of it is put on carrying bars or a frame, I think the NIV has. A carrying frame the NIV has. Some kind of construction that allowed them to safely carry the candlestick. So now we go to Numbers chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. We're still in the holy place, the furniture. We've gotten rid of the table. We've packed up the seven-branch candlestick, and now we need to pack up the golden altar. Verse 11, over the golden altar they shall spread a blue cloth and cover it with a covering of porpoise skin, and shall insert its poles. Again, no red cloth for it. Red cloth, scarlet cloth was only for the table. And they shall insert its poles, of course, because the golden altar also, if you remember the description of that in Exodus, it had rings at the corners so that poles could be inserted to carry it. Same thing with the Ark of the Testimony, too, for that matter, had rings for poles. Verse 12, and they shall take all the utensils of service, that means the utensils that were used to service this golden altar of incense, with which they serve in the sanctuary, and put them in a blue cloth, and cover them with a covering of porpoise skin, and put them on the carrying bars. So in other words, the blue cloth, there's one blue cloth and porpoise skin for the golden altar of incense, another blue cloth and porpoise skin for the utensils that were used in taking care of the golden altar. Now, what did those utensils of service include? Well, I'm sure, this is my speculation, they included incense pans or fire pans, some translations have it, where you put incense in a flat plate on top of burning coals. Also, you need tongs or forks to remove the coals or move coals around on the altar. And when the coals burn out and turn to ash, you need shovels to shovel the coals in or out. You also need pails to put the ashes in. I would be surprised if that was not included. I would not be surprised if ash pails were included in the utensils of service. We go now to Numbers chapter 4, verses 13 through 15. Then they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth over it. Now, this is the bronze altar of burnt offering that is in the doorway of the tent of meeting. It's not the golden altar of incense in the holy place. It gets a purple cloth instead of a blue cloth. I don't know why, maybe just to distinguish it, which I think might be necessary, because once you cover these pieces of sacred furniture over, it might be easy to forget what's what. So they should take away the ashes from the altar. There's constant animals being burnt on the bronze altar, so there's ashes under the screen there, halfway up the bronze altar in the hollow inside, and so those ashes had to be carried off. Now, the eternal fire that was burnt all the time, the perpetual fire that never went out, it was probably packed and carried along, as John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, but it's not mentioned here. Now, the fact that ashes are to be carried out, this implies very strongly that sacrifices were indeed offered in the wilderness. All this sacrificial ritual that's described in Leviticus was not meant to be postponed until the arrival in Canaan. No, it was meant to be done in the wilderness too, and I thoroughly support that. Here's some scriptures that back that up too. Exodus 18:12, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before God. Now that's at Mount Sinai. Jethro hops over the Gulf of Aqaba there, or near the Gulf of Aqaba, from where he was in Midian, and he went up to Mount Sinai, and he took a burnt offering. Well, that means that there was an offering in the wilderness right there. Exodus 24:4, Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. Then he arose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain, that's Mount Sinai, with 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel. Well, he has an altar there with those 12 pillars. What's an altar for? It's to burn sacrifices on. That's before the altar, bronze altar burnt offering had been built. But anyway, it sounds like they were very used to sacrificing in the wilderness. Notice that the direction of movement that we see in this packing, in these packing instructions. What's the first thing that's packed up? The Holy of Holies. What's the next thing that's packed up? The holy place, the three pieces of furniture in there. The Holy of Holies, of course, was the Ark of the Covenant. That's already been packed in the earlier verses that we've already gone over. And then the holy place, we've just packed up the table of the showbread, the seven-branch candlestick, and the golden altar of incense. And now we move, continuing to move east, going out the doorway into the courtyard. There's the bronze altar, and we've packed that up. Now, no mention is made of the laver, which is also in the courtyard. Here's some speculations as to why. John Gill says maybe it was because it was carried uncovered and it didn't need to be packed. It was a bronze laver. It's not going to be hurt by rain at all. It spent all of its life being covered with water. Or it could be a textual omission that actually laver is in the original text. The Septuagint translation has this, "And they shall take a purple cloth and cover the laver and its base, and shall put it into a covering of skin of a blue color and put it upon bearers." So perhaps it's a textual problem, difference between the Masoretic and the Septuagint text. At any rate, that's not a big deal. Obviously, they carried the bronze laver with them. Now, the bronze altar had a purple cloth and not blue. I don't know why, maybe just to distinguish it. The utensils that are mentioned that are packed along with the bronze altar, we see that they are mentioned by name here in verse 14. They shall also put on it, on that altar, all of its utensils by which they serve in connection with it, the fire pans, the forks, shovels, and the basins, and all the utensils of the altar. Well, what will they be? Well, the fire pan would be like a censer that carries coals and incense. Forks would be meat forks to stick into animals and move them around on the altar. Shovels to shovel the ashes out of the altar. The basins to collect the blood that's being drained from the sacrificial animals. And then there's a catch-all phrase, all the utensils of the altar. Exodus 27:3 mentions these utensils. "You shall make its pails for removing its ashes, and its shovels, and its basins, and its forks, and its fire pans." Those are all what I've just mentioned. "You shall make all its utensils of bronze." So the bronze altar has bronze utensils, so we can just call them bronze utensils. There's one thing that's mentioned here in Exodus 27:3 that's not mentioned in Numbers 4, the pails. Mentioned shovels in Numbers 4, but no pails. Well, the shovels and pails went together. You had to shovel the ashes into the pails. Now let's look at verse 14. "They shall spread a cover of porpoise skin over the bronze altar," again, to keep the rain off, "and insert its pole." So the Ark of the Covenant, the golden altar, the table of showbread, and the bronze altar had rings and poles on the corners. Had rings on the corners and poles stuck through those rings to carry. Maybe not on the corners. Some people say some of them are halfway down. I don't want to be too technical about that, but the idea is that they're all carried by poles and rings. Now, all of these holy pieces of holy furniture are to be carried on the shoulder of the Levites. That's what the purpose of the poles is. That was the normal mode of transport, as Jameson Fawcett Brown says. We see that in Numbers 7, verse 9. "But he did not give any," referring cart to carts and oxen, "he did not give," I think the "he" there is not God, but Moses, "did not give any carts and oxen to the sons of Kohath, because theirs was the service of the holy objects which they carried on the shoulder." Yes, I just checked. It was Moses that did not give any carts and oxen to the sons of Kohath. They carried the furniture on the shoulder. Afterwards, wheeled vehicles were employed, as Jameson Fawcett and Brown say. Here's some scripture. 2 Samuel 6:3. "They placed the ark of God on a new cart, that they might bring it from the house of Abinadab, which is on the hill, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were leading the new cart. And of course, you remember the cart got wobbly. They touched it, zap, and they were killed because they touched the ark. They weren't supposed to be touching the ark. They're supposed to be carrying it with poles through the rings so that they wouldn't touch the ark. And that's another idea, too. The rings and the poles kept people from touching the ark. 2 Samuel 6, verses 6 through 7, "But when they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out toward the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen nearly upset it. And the anger of the Lord burned against Uzzah, and God struck him down there for his irreverence, and he died there by the ark of God." It's better to do things the way God said to do them. Numbers 4:16, as we continue. "The responsibility of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, is the oil for the light and the fragrant incense and the continual grain offering and the anointing oil. The responsibility of all the tabernacle and of all that is in it with the sanctuary and its furnishings." So Eleazar, the first surviving son of Aaron, remember Nadab and Abihu are going to be killed for their sin. And maybe that's why God, through Moses, put Eleazar in charge here, for all of the things that are necessary for the internal service of the tabernacle. The incense that Eleazar was in charge of is mentioned in Exodus 30, verse 34. "Then the Lord said to Moses, take for yourself spices, stakte and anika and galbanum, spices with pure frankincense. There shall be an equal part of each." I don't know what all those pieces of the incense are, but it's obviously they are specifically designated, and I'm sure they were valuable and sweet-smelling and so forth. That was incense for burning on the golden altar of incense. And since we're now talking about the Kohathites, who were responsible for removing all the internal pieces of sacred furniture, it makes sense that they would be in charge of carrying the incense and the oil to burn the lampstand, the lamps and the lampstand. The continual grain offering, that's the loaves of, well, actually, that's not the loaves of the bread of the presence. The continual grain offering is the grain offering that was offered every morning and evening. And I guess they carried that bread with them. They had flour mixed with oil, which they would bake three ways into bread. They probably carried the flour and the oil mixed together and uncooked. And the anointing oil was used to anoint priests and also the tabernacle. Now, this happened before the tabernacle was broken down and carried off. The priests were anointed as they were consecrated. The original priests were, but again, more priests would have to be anointed later as some priests died and other priests were added and so forth. And so the anointing oil would be needed for that. The tabernacle itself was also anointed. In Exodus 30, we read that. Not only the tabernacle, but also the sacred furniture, the table, the utensils, the Ark of the Testimony, the altar of incense, the golden altar, the altar of burnt offering, the bronze laver, all of that was anointed with oil. But it seems to me that would only have to be done once, so I don't know what they would need the anointing oil afterwards, except they would have to anoint priests with it, so they carried the anointing oil, and Eleazar's in charge of that. Jameson Fawcett and Brown says of Eleazar's responsibility that he, quote, was charged with the special duty of superintending the squadron who were employed in the carrying of the sacred furniture. So Eleazar's in charge. We go now to Numbers 4, verses 17 through 20. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, do not let the tribe of the families of the Kohathites be cut off from among the Levites. Cut off means killed. But do this to them, that they may live and not die when they approach the most holy objects. Aaron and his sons shall go in and assign each of them to his work and to his load, but they shall not go in to see the holy objects even for a moment, or they will die. And that's why the holy objects had to be covered over. Basically, the way this worked is the priests, who were allowed to go in, they would go in and pack up everything, cover the furniture with the coverings, the blue and the red and the purple coverings, as we just mentioned. And then, once the sacred furniture was covered, then the Kohathites, that branch of the Levites who were Kohathites, could go inside and put the poles. Well, actually, the poles were already put in by the priest, probably. They would go in and just pick up the pieces of furniture and start walking. And if they didn't do it right, they were cut off. And cut off means die. And I assume that means by the immediate hand of God, as John Gill says, like Nadab and Abihu were immediately fried when they offered strange fire. You violate the Levitical requirements here and you die immediately. Not by judicial process, but you die immediately by the hand of God. So now we go to Numbers 4, verses 21 through 28. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take a census of the sons of Gershon also, by their families, from 30 years and upward to 50 years old. So now we move from the Kohathite clan to the Gershonite clan, the clan of Kohath to the clan of Gershon. They're going to have different responsibilities. Their census is exactly the same as far as age, 30 years to 50 years old. Verse 24, this is the service of the families of the Gershonites in serving and in carrying. That serving could mean there are specific types of service they do, but I don't think so, because all the Levites did the typical service in the tabernacle. It probably means in serving, and in carrying means they're serving by carrying. So carrying is just a repeat of serving. So this is how the Gershonites carried. They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle and the tent of meeting with its covering and the covering of porpoise skin that is on the top of it. So the best way to remember the Gershonites is they carried cloth. Curtains of the tabernacle, that would be the doorway that separated the holy place from the courtyard, not the inner veil between the holy place and the Holy of Holies, because the Kohathites carried that, I guess because it was associated with the Ark of the Covenant. But these two curtains are the curtains that separate the holy place from the courtyard and also the curtain that separates the outer courtyard from the camp. So the Gershonites shall carry that, and they shall also carry the covering and covering of porpoise skin that is on top of the tabernacle. All right, so again, Gershonites cloth. Remember, the wooden tabernacle was covered with four coverings, as we described in Exodus. You had the linen was the first covering. The second was ram skin. The third was some kind of red leather. The fourth was a sea animal skin. So those four curtains, they would be carried by the Gershonites. And the screen for the door of the tent of meeting, I've already mentioned that. Verse 26, and the hangings of the court, that's the white linen that was all around the outer courtyard, and the screen for the doorway of the gate of the court. I've already mentioned that, but, well, I just said the doorway of the tent of meeting. That's the doorway from the Holy of Place to the courtyard. That's one screen, and the other screen is the doorway of the gate of the court, which is the outer courtyard's passageway into the camp, which surrounded the whole tabernacle complex, if you will. So those screens were carried by the Gershonites. And so let me back up a little bit. And the screen for the doorway of the gate of the court, which is around the tabernacle and the altar. Again, that's the bronze altar. And their cords and all the equipment for their service. Now the phrase, all the equipment for their service, sounds like the service of the doorway to the gate of the court and the hangings of the courtyard and so forth. Then it sounds like it's talking about the pegs and the bases and the cords to hold up the post of the outer screen of the courtyard, but that can't be what it means, because we see in verse 36 that all of those cords and pegs and so forth were carried by the Merarites. So this equipment of their service there must refer to the altar. Let me read it again. Verse 26, of the hangings of the court and the screen for the doorway of the gate of the court, which is around the tabernacle and the altar, and their cords and equipment for their service, meaning the service of the altar and the tabernacle. And of course, that would be basically all the equipment for handling the sacrifices, which would be tables in the courtyard on which the sacrifices were laid, meat hooks to hang sacrifices on, pins to hold the meat down, and cords to fasten the meat, which means the cords here are not the cords that hold up the outer courtyard screen, but the cords that hold the meat. All that is to be done they shall perform. All the service of the sons of the Gershonites and all their loads and in all their work shall be performed at the command of Aaron and his sons. Again, Aaron and his sons are the priests. They were in charge of all this breaking down and moving operations. Aaron and his sons were also in charge of the Kohathites and the Merarites too. But here it's mentioned that they're in charge of the Gershonites. And you shall assign to them as a duty all their load. So again, the priest were the supervisors in this operation. They said, Gershonite 1, you do this. Gershonite 2, you do this. Gershonite 3, you take care of that. Verse 28, this is the service of the families of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting, and their duties shall be under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. Remember, Aaron's the high priest. He's got two remaining sons, Eleazar. The first one was in charge of the Kohathites who carried the furniture, the sacred furniture, and now the second surviving son of Aaron, Ithamar, later to become a high priest, just like Eleazar did later. The second surviving son, Ithamar, was in charge of the Gershonites who were carrying the coverings, the screens, the curtains. Now, John Gill makes the point in verse 21. It says the Lord spoke to Moses about the Gershonites. Aaron's not mentioned, but Aaron did participate in the census of the Gershonites. Numbers 4:41, we see that. Aaron numbered the Gershonites. It doesn't matter. I think too much of a big deal is made about whether God is speaking to Moses or Aaron at the same time. Aaron also participated in numbering the sons of the Kohathites as well as the Gershonites. He's just not mentioned here. I don't think it's a big deal. Now, I mentioned cords and equipment that were carried in verse 26. Now, I mentioned the equipment for putting up the outer screen of the courtyard, but other equipment is probably included here. As John Gill points out, tables in the courtyard on which sacrifices were laid, meat hooks to hang the sacrifices on, pins to hold the meat down while the cutting is done, cords to fasten the meat to the altar, that kind of thing. So all that was carried by the Gershonites. We go to Numbers 4, verses 29 through 33. As for the sons of Merari, now when we finished with the Kohathites, they did the sacred furniture. Now we finished with the Gershonites, they did all the curtains and screens, as well as some courtyard equipment. Now we go to the third clan of Levi, Merari. They're going to carry the tabernacle itself. They're going to do the heavy lifting. Verse 29, as for the sons of Merari, you shall number them by their families, by their fathers' households, from 30 years upward, even to 50 years old, same number of years as the other two clans. You shall number them, everyone who enters the service to do the work of the tent of meeting. Now this is the duty of their loads for all their service in the tent of meeting, the boards of the tabernacle and its bars. The bars ran through rings on the side of the boards. The boards were vertical planks. I forgot how wide they were, foot and a half. I can't remember exactly, but they were vertical planks that were lined up side to side vertically, and then they had rings on the planks and bars were stuck through the rings, and that would hold the boards together. And its pillars and its sockets. The pillars would refer to the post in the doorway between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. There were four pillars there, four posts. And in the doorway that from the holy place into the courtyard, there were five posts there. They all had sockets. Two of the pillars had sockets that they were placed in. Not to mention all the boards of the tabernacle had sockets too. There were golden sockets running all the way around, and those were heavy. So those would be carried by the sons of Merari. And the pillars around the court and their sockets and their pegs and their cords, the cords that went from the top of the post down to the pegs in the ground to pull them tight. So anyway, all of that is carried by Merari. You shall assign each man by name the items he is to carry. Now that's an interesting detail. It's not mentioned with the other two clan leaders, with the Kohathites and the Gershonites. It's only mentioned with Merari. Speculation for that is because there were so many small pieces with all these pegs and cords and so forth, not to mention individual boards of the tabernacle that might need to be put somewhat in order. Maybe not. But at any rate, the priest, well, it says you, referring to Moses, but I'm assuming that Moses delegated the duty to the priest so that the priest would assign each Merarite by what item he was supposed to carry, so they wouldn't get confused. This is the service of the families of the sons of Merari, according to all their service in the tent of meeting under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the high priest. So Ithamar is in charge of the Gershonites to carry the curtains and screens, and he's also in charge of the Merarites to carry the superstructure of the tabernacle, as well as the implements to hold the courtyard screen up. Notice how meticulously organized all this is. Why is it that each man was named by name and assigned to a particular part of the tabernacle here, but not with the other two clan leaders? Jameson Fossum Brown has this to say. On account of their number and variety, but of their comparative commonness and smallness, which might have led to their being lost or missing through carelessness, inadvertency, or neglect. We go now to Numbers 4, verses 34 through 49, and we'll finish this audio, and I'm not going to read it because it's too long and it just is extremely repetitive. And basically what it says this, it takes the three families and tells how many of them were numbered from 30 to 50 years old. The Kohathites had 2,750. The Gershonites had 2,630 between 30 and 50. And the Merarites had 3,200 between 30 and 50. And then in verse 48, all of those were added up and you end up with 8,580 people to move the tabernacle, which seems like an awful lot. Verse 49 finishes up by saying, according to the commandment of the Lord through Moses, they were numbered, everyone by his serving or carrying. Thus these were his numbered men, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Now we need to note something here. The numbers are given are not the same numbers as the previous chapter. In the previous chapter, the Levites were numbered, but from a month old and upwards, so each Levite could redeem a firstborn of the tribe of Israel. Here it's who is able to carry the tabernacle from 30 to 50. It's a subset, and so the numbers are smaller here. Now let's take the total number of 8,580 who are able to move the tabernacle. That's, first of all, relative to the total number of warriors who were numbered in chapter 1, I believe it was. They were small. There were a lot more warriors. I mean, the tribe of Judah alone had 74,600 warriors, and here the members of the Levites who were able to move the tabernacle is 8,580. So you're talking about, what, an eighth as many? Well, the army needed to be big. But even though only 8,580 Levites were used to move the tabernacle, think about it. That's a lot of people to move one tabernacle. I suspect that they divided themselves into courses early and divided the work by time, which is what happened later on in New Testament history. I suspect that. Adam Clark says that this number is an astonishing number of men. And I'm sure what he means is astonishing for the work that they had to do, not compared to the number of warriors. Now, here's what Adam Clark says as to why so many men were needed. Quote, from this and the preceding chapter, we see that the very severe labor which the Levites were obliged to perform while the journeyings of the Israelites lasted. When we consider that there was not less than almost 10 tons and 1,400 pounds weight of metal employed in the tabernacle, besides the immense weight of the skins, hangings, cords, boards, and posts, we shall find it was no very easy matter to transport this movable temple from place to place. And that kind of puts some perspective on it. I mean, they're carrying it through the desert, a desert now, and I've been in that desert. It's just incredibly desolate and forlorn and dry. And they're carrying this stuff according to my tour guide, but it's over there, all those wadis that we hear about so much that are dry most of the time. It says if there's a flash flood, it says if you're in the middle of that wadi, you're dead. You're drowned just like that. The water come on you, you won't have a chance. Can you imagine if you're carrying all this 10 tons and 1,400 pounds of metal? I'm sure that's talking about the bases that were made out of gold and silver. Gold and silver is extremely heavy. And then all the skins, the hangings. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, there was a lot of Levites necessary to move the tabernacle, but it was a big job. And, again, I'm sure they didn't do it. I'm sure 8,000 people weren't carrying the ark at the same time. I'm sure they divided the labor up. Now, in verse 49, we have a little bit of ambiguity here. The 8,580 men were, according to the commandment of God, by his serving or carrying. Does serving mean he serves in the processes of carrying the tabernacle, or does it mean the 8,580 also participated in the general service of the temple, which would mean, of course, playing music, singing, standing guard at night, cooking some sacrifices and all that? I don't know. It seems like all this is talking about carrying, so I think the reference would be to carrying the tabernacle. At any rate, we are now finished with Numbers chapter 4, verses 1 through 49. And we are prepared to move now to Numbers 5, the whole chapter, 1 through 31. Next audio, we will talk about three somewhat unrelated topics: unclean people, confession and restitution, and adultery. Although you might say they're sort of connected. An adulterer is unclean. He needs to make confession and restitution, or she does. But at any rate, we'll look at that next time. I hope you stay tuned for that, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.